Next morning, he set out across the island, the otak riding on his shoulder, as it had used to. This time it took him 3 days, not two, to walk to the isolate tower, and he was bone-weary when he came in sight of the tower above the spitting, hissing seas of the northern cape. Inside it was dark, as he remembered, and cold, as he remembered, and Kurum Karamoruk sat on his high seat writing down lists of names. He glanced at Ged and said without welcome, as if Ged had never been away, "Go to bed. Tired is stupid. Tomorrow you may open the book of the undertakings of the makers, learning the names therein." At winter's end he returned to the great house. He was made sorcerer then, and the archmage Genscher accepted at that time his fealty. Thenceforth he studied the high arts and enchantments, passing beyond arts of illusion to the works of real magery, learning what he must know to earn his wizard's staff. The trouble he had had in speaking spells wore off over the months, and skill returned into his hands. Yet he was never so quick to learn as he had been, having learned a long, hard lesson from fear. Yet no ill portents or encounters followed on his working, even of the great spells of making and shaping, which are most perilous, and he came to wonder at times if the shadow he had loosed might have grown weak or fled somehow out of the world, for it came no more into his dreams. But in his heart he knew such hope was folly. From the masters and from ancient lore books Ged learned what he could about such beings as this shadow he had loosed. Little was there to learn. No such creature was described or spoken of directly. There were at best hints here and there in the old books of things that might be like the shadow beast. It was not a ghost of human man, nor was it a creature of the old powers of earth, and yet it seemed it might have some link with these. In The Matter of the Dragons, which Ged read very closely, there was a tale of an ancient dragon lord who had come under the sway of one of the old powers, a speaking stone that lay in a far northern land. "At the stone's command," said the book, "he did speak to raise up a dead spirit out of the realm of the dead, but his wizardry being bent awry by the stone's will, there came with the dead spirit also a thing not summoned, which did devour him out from within, and in his shape walked, destroying men." But the book did not say what the thing was, nor did it tell the end of the tale. And the masters did not know where such a shadow might come from. "From unlife," the archmage had said. "From the wrong side of the world," said the master changer. And the master summoner said, "I do not know." The summoner had come often to sit with Ged in his illness. He was grim and grave as ever, but Ged knew now his compassion and loved him well. "I do not know. I know of the thing only this, that only a great power could have summoned up such a thing, and perhaps only one power, only one voice, your voice. But what in turn that means, I do not know. But you will find out. You must find out, or die, and worse than die," he spoke softly, and his eyes were somber as he looked at Ged, "you thought as a boy that a mage is one who can do anything. And so I thought once. So did we all, and the truth is that as a man's real power grows and his knowledge widens, ever the way he can follow grows narrower, until at last he chooses nothing, but does only and wholly what he must do." The archmage sent Ged, after his 18th birthday, to work with the master patterner. What is learned in the Immanent Grove is not much talked about elsewhere. It is said that no spells are worked there, and yet the place itself is an enchantment. Sometimes the trees of that grove are seen, and sometimes they are not seen, and they are not always in the same place and part of Roke Island. It is said that the trees of the grove themselves are wise. It is said that the master patterner learns his supreme magery there within the grove, and if ever the trees should die, so shall his wisdom die, and in those days the waters will rise and drown the islands of Earth Sea, which Sigoi raised from the deeps in the time before myth, all the lands where men and dragons dwell. But all this is hearsay, and wizards will not speak of it. And so the months went by, and at last, on a day of spring, Ged returned to the great house, and he had no idea what would be asked of him next. At the door that gives on the path across the fields to Roque Knoll, an old man met him, waiting for him in the doorway. At first Ged did not know him, and then, putting his mind to it, recalled him as the one who had let him into the school on the day of his coming, 5 years ago. The old man smiled, greeting him by name, and asked, "Do you know who I am?" Now, Ged had thought before of how it was always said the nine masters of Roque, although he knew only eight. Winkey, Hand, Herbal, Chanter, Changer, Summoner, Namer, Patterner. It seemed that people spoke of the Archmage as the ninth, yet when a new Archmage was chosen, nine masters met to choose him. "I think you are the master doorkeeper," said Ged.
"I am. Ged, you won entrance to Roque by saying your name. Now you may win your freedom of it by saying mine."
So said the old man, smiling, and waited.
Ged stood dumb. He knew a thousand ways and crafts and means for finding out names of things and of men, of course. Such craft was a part of everything he had learned at Roque, for without it there could be little useful magic done. But to find out the name of a mage and master was another matter. A mage's name is better hidden than a herring in the sea, better guarded than a dragon's den. A prying charm will be met with a stronger charm. Subtle devices will fail. Devious inquiries will be deviously thwarted, and force will be turned